Blog Talk Radio.
Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I'm Susan Laris and Danz, welcoming you back to what has been just a wonderful 3 days in a row. We don't always do shows 3 days in a row, but it's really been quite a delightful week on this show. And today, I am just so happy to welcome a wonderful guest onto the show, who I will bring on the line in just a moment after I introduce her. Diane Bischoff James. Now, Diane is the author of The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now. She is also the founder of LiveYourEverything.com. And quite honestly, I am so looking forward to exploring Diane's own powerful journey, because her authentic path is her work. It's her life, and this is how she's changing lives worldwide by sharing her honest and authentic story, which we're going to explore today. Diane speaks of so many things that I know many of us can relate to. She had a very successful career, and yet it wasn't feeding her soul. And so she journeyed through so many things, from losing weight, eliminating depression, encountering physical issues. She launched a new acting career following her heart. She navigated a healthy divorce. She also survived an addictive relationship. And she has a very impressive traditional background, with a master's degree in integrated marketing communications and a BA in psychology. And yet her background that she brings to us now is a much more comprehensive background, one based fully in the heart. And I could feel that even just speaking with her a couple minutes before the show now. And she is now a dynamic speaker, and she is an empowerment coach. And she's assisting people worldwide with the same kind of transformation that she personally experienced. And that is a real gift. So again, her website, liveyoureverything.com, it's up on the show page, and I invite you to visit that. And I am just so very delighted to bring Diane Bischoff James on the line. Welcome, Diane.
Oh, thank you so much, Susan. I am so happy to be here today.
Well, I am delighted to have you here, because I feel that through your own authenticity, you really do have so much to teach. And, you know, I think I'd like to start it there is how important, Diane, was discovering your own way of being authentic key to your own transformation, and then how you are able to translate that to others?
That's a fabulous question. So thank you for starting with that. I think for me it was about missing a lot of the signals and missing the cues. I found that my authentic self had been whispering to me probably since I was a kid, and I had been programmed otherwise, told by parents, society, you know, really strict background, you know, a real German father who was ex-military, and I I kept listening to what was being told to me to do, following, going for that American dream and trying to get all those the bling and the ring and the stuff and the house and the car and the cute shoes. And I missed all of the signals that were being kind of like whispered and then eventually shouted at me to be authentic. And it took me until my 38th birthday to have a big wake-up call. So I think your question is great, because I believe we're probably being communicated with from a very early age, but I don't think we've been taught to be sensitive to it and then to kind of look at how it impacts you when you're not. And that was the really big signal for me. On my 38th birthday, I went to see Sonia Choquette, who a lot of people know now. She's internationally known. She's a psychic and a healer. Mm-hmm. And at that time, that was like over a decade ago, she was smaller, still growing, had a couple books, and I saw her in her home. And she told me, while I sat there, I thought she was going to say, "Oh, you're just awesome, and everything about you is great, and just keep going, keep get big
great.
Career." And I had the big mini mansion, and I had the convertible. I had all the cute stuff.
Yep.
And I really thought she was going to say that was right on. But instead, she knocked me to my knees. She took her bat out and, kind of like batted me over the head. Not only, I would say metaphorically. But
yes,
she just said, "Everything about your life is wrong. You're an unlit Christmas tree. None of your bulbs are firing." And she started rattling off what my life should have been. And, she said, "You're an actor, an author, a teacher, a healer. And you're not doing any of it. And if you don't hurry up and grab the real brass ring," which ended up becoming the title of the book, she goes, "It's going to be all too late." So I had to get kind of the wind knocked out of me and to be beaten up soundly in order for me to actually stop and say, okay, authentic, what is authentic? What does it mean? And how many signals have I been missing along the way? So I think that is such a great question to start with, because we all have the answers. We can choose to listen to them or not. And I was deaf as deaf can be. So that's how my journey started.
I think so many of us can relate to that. And my goodness, what a gift that is. I think, sometimes when we seek intuitive guidance, and I've had all kinds of people on this show, some of whom, provide intuitive guidance, be careful what you ask for, I guess, because when you're talking, it's true. When you're talking to someone who is truly intuitive, they are going to see right to the heart of the matter. They don't see the surface level bling, and all the things that what we project to the world. They see the real. And what a gift she gave you. And I'll tell you, Diane, I know that people of all ages listen to this show. And to me, it would be such a wonderful gift to people if these sorts of stories help, the next generation to begin to see those signs earlier as well as people in midlife. I feel like this message can reach everyone. How do we really see what we're truly called to be and not what everyone else is projecting onto us?
Exactly. What's so exciting about that is that we've been offering life reboot workshops all over the country, and I really had an expectation. I thought it would be a lot of women and more middle age. And what I'm finding is that it is a universal appeal, that a lot of times there are some, young 20-year-olds in there saying, "I don't want to do it over. I want to do it right. I want to do what feels good." So it's really nice because, and there's a lot of men too who are awakening as well. So it's been a great mix of people, all ages. I once had someone who was, and this was like in California probably only a month ago, I think we had a 19-year-old and an 80-year-old. We had the full spectrum of life in the room.
Wow.
Of people saying, if I don't reboot, at least I'm going to boot right. And then, it's never, ever, ever, ever too late to get on path. And I think that's a key message. I think spirit would say, it's not when you get on path, it's that you get on your life's path, and it's that you pursue your life's work. Even if it comes, for me, it was all covered up in this big shroud of, well, for me, it was like a lot of expectations, and I'm afraid kind of the, not only cover up from society, but, you know, I was the tail end of the baby boomers, so the parents were tail end of the depression, and they were never taught to question or to say, no, you know what, that doesn't fit, that doesn't feel right, ooh, that feels yucky inside. It was more, you know, sir, yes, sir. You know, we're going to do
yes.
it, you know, we're going to
yes.
keep those lifer jobs, which don't even exist anymore, and, you know, and go down that road, and when you retire, then I'll be happy, because I'll get to chill out, play golf, or do whatever I want to do. Well, I don't think that model is broken right now. I mean, thank goodness that model's broken.
Yeah.
I hope that we can all start pursuing joy, which comes from being in your authentic space and being in those real shoes, which you came here to fill. That's when I find that the joy and the love from inside, just kind of the light goes on and it bursts forth. And it can be at any age at any time.
Yes, yes. I so relate to this, because these surprises in life can actually be a gift. And I will tell you, and my audience knows this, that I was working on an executive floor, and really my dream job, Diane, I had my dream job. And, you know, it was 2008, not a very good year economy-wise, and, you know, that job went away. And I had another option, but I didn't choose it. I would not be doing what I'm doing right now. There is no way I would be doing any of this if not for that gift. And yet that didn't feel like a gift at the time. I mean, and how many times does this happen? And, you know, and actually, I do have a question for you, because I know there are people out there like me who, in one way or another, we have pursued certain things. I have to say, in my own life, I'm kind of happy that I reached a certain completion of that part. I was a computer science, MS in computer science. You know, I pleased everybody, you know. I mean, my parents got the scholarship, whatever. And it was a gift in a way to get that to a certain point where I got what I needed there and then realized, wow, there is so much more. And now I'm learning from people like you. And I know during the day, even now, years later, there are many people who've had to recreate themselves or have chosen to recreate themselves. And in many ways, that was me. I chose. I said, okay, this is my opportunity. And although I learn imperfectly too. So I guess, and to make a long story short, through navigating through all of that, I guess, do you look back, Diane, at what you went through during those times when you were, pursuing the other brass ring, so to speak? Do you see the gifts of that in their own way? Are you able to be thankful for all of your experiences and where they've brought you today? And how does gratitude play in assisting your clients as well? How do we come to peace with the entirety of our lives? Very, very complex question, but there you go.
I love it. It's multifaceted. It's great.
Yes.
Well, I would like to touch on just kind of the beginning aspect of all that, and that's the goal. I mean, what occurred to me is that I had the physical symptoms. I was, 190
uh-huh.
pounds. So physically, the body was saying, you're off track. And then I had the depression. I was popping Prozac like there was no tomorrow. So I had the insides were saying, you know, this is wrong. This doesn't feel right. Everything you're doing, that model is the wrong model for you. And it's, inauthentic. And what I found is that the goal was wrong, and that it wasn't about, look at the Kardashians. How incredibly happy is that group over there?
Right.
They have so much of the financial aspect of it, but they don't have life richness. And so
exactly.
I had to rescore everything and say, okay, what is life richness? What would it mean to actually get that 1 minute of being able to put the word, I love it, in a sentence and mean it?
And
that's where I look at that wonderful period of 08 where it just started, and I call it like the great equalizer, because
uh-huh.
I think it was the first time that the universe took all of us, pulled that rug, pulled it out, and said,
yep.
I'm going to shake it up. I'm going to shake you up. I'm doing it for you, not to you, but I'm going to do it on your behalf, so that we could all reevaluate the track. And so many people, I'm so grateful, like you and like so many others have said, okay, I'm on the wrong path. I have an opportunity to do something new. Let's take advantage of it. And I think that that shaking of the ground is what forced us to move towards these new experiences where your wave is moving in these really nice patterns. And what I found is that in order to reach life richness, I had to go back, start over, clean house. I mean, how do you become an actor at 40? You know, it sounds, and not only that,
I think
but of course my dad
wonderful.
Said, like, that's the worst career ever, and that's why I didn't pursue it, although I was, you know, high school musical superstar, and then that's radio silence, because, yeah, it's probably the hardest career, because it also pays very little, but what I found is that even pursuing it at the simplest level felt so awesome that it was more fun to be on stage and have those lights on for like 5 minutes than it would be to do my marketing job for, you know, for a week, a month, a year, or whatever. It just felt so much, I felt so much joy and gratitude just to be up there. I lost 30 pounds immediately once I started. I broke into the, you know, broke into community theater, you know, but I started, at least got on stage and playing around with it and trying to find that other side, that spontaneous side, the very improv-y side of being real, and just throwing yourself on stage to see what would happen. And that just felt so yummy and so good that it was, you do it because you love it. And and so what I started doing is looking at these things as tracks, and one is the passion track. And and this kind of ties back into the full aspect of your question and the gratitude. The passion track is when you feel any of those aspects of flow. It feels fabulous. You start to smile. You lose track of time. You would do it all day if nobody gave you a penny, you know.
It's just
great. But then I've also, I'm very much a realist.
Yep.
And there's the financial track.
Yep.
And this is the part where I think we got a little funky after The Secret, because it seemed like The Secret said, okay, if I say I want $1 million, there's going to be a bag of money on my doorstep tomorrow with a bunch of cash in it, and I'll count it out exactly what I said. Well, I don't think that's how it works. I think what I've experienced is that we need to take responsibility for our accountable authenticity, and the accountable part includes making sure that you have, you know, your means are covered and you're healthy and well, but that you are moving towards your passion track and stepping onto it with as many steps as you can get over there. And very often they could be the same thing. Sometimes they are, but sometimes they're not. And that's where I had to embrace and love the marketing side of the world, because it was something that was super easy, been doing it forever, you know, do it in my sleep. And it was very financially, you know, I needed it for my family. I have three small children. So, well, they're not so small anymore, but, you know, I have three kids.
So
that's where I started looking at it and breaking it all out and saying, okay, if you appreciate the financial track that is supporting the passion track, then you have permission to really put it in like this blended composition. And I just want to touch on, I also put together these 14 rules for happy living that became the foundation for moving forward. And that's where the best part of the education comes, not only from the book, but it's how I changed my life. It's how I'm able to help other people do that with private consulting. And it's also part of the training. And those are the lessons that are really concise and clear that help us move from where we are to where we want to go.
Yes. You know, you captured something really important, and I feel it's vitally important for this particular audience, too, because I have to tell you, Diane, and I have to admit I've experienced this firsthand, there's a tendency sometimes within the spiritual community, especially where we're doing something that is in real service, and we love it, we love it, we love it, and yet we're not taking care of that financial aspect. And I feel like this is really very common, where we feel like, you know, we're pursuing our passion, and then we might have some hard lessons to learn where we shift our perspective and broaden it so that, you know, we can get that part on track. And I think, you know, this can especially happen if we have a lot to seed what we're doing, where I've talked to more than one person. I can think of an example right in my mind, a friend of mine who you know, he bought a store. He was an executive in a career unrelated to spirituality. Well, then went on a spiritual path, and he wouldn't mind me talking about him, bought a store at one point, did all these things. But ultimately, it was what he loved, but it wasn't really, it wasn't sustaining him and his family. And so if we could capture what you are offering here, where we're following our hearts, yet getting that other piece in place, and I really want to explore that a little more deeply, because I've just encountered a number of people, and I've seen it in myself, where we don't quite get how to put that piece in place, even if we've had successful careers or whatever, because we're trying to do it in a different way. You know, we're entrepreneurs. We're doing something totally different. You know, a lot of people don't know how to be an entrepreneur. I mean, we're learning as we go. So, again, a very complex kind of a question and reflection, but I know that you capture something vitally, vitally important for many of the listeners here on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I think part of that is just understanding where you are in your path of life's work. And this is a very, obviously, a personal question. It's a very deep question. And every person can answer it only for themselves. And if you feel, let's say your friend is pursuing this aspect of spirituality, learning more and wanting to help others, I'm guessing that resonates very strongly with his life's work. The life's work is to help others, you know, grow, to help others with their consciousness, to help others heal. And so that feels usually awesome when we're doing it, especially if it's, you know, right in line with your skill set. And so that part of the train gets to be introduced. You know, it just first makes out, the first step out of the gate, and this is what I've found, not only for me, but with all the clients that I've been able to help, that first step out of the gate, which is to, let's say you want to open a store or you want to do something that's new, you need to remember that there's like a stage gate process to it. And that first steps, I'm sure you found the same thing. I found the same thing.
Well,
I could
probably
write a how not to write a book because my process was so profoundly imperfect that I think my how not to write a book would just flow out of me. I did everything wrong. And I shotgunned everything across onto like a wall, and whatever stuck, stuck, and whatever didn't. Because I didn't, quite frankly, know exactly what I was doing. And so it came, like the whole thing just poured out. I felt like it was something I needed to do. I had enough encouragement to get it done. But I was winging it. And in winging it, you're going to have to muddle through the mire. And so I think we need to really honor and recognize, first of all, where you are in the process. And what I've found is there's these steps. The first one is, you know, you throw it out. You throw it onto the street and see what sticks. And the second step is you start to get feedback. And sometimes it would be, I love what you're doing, or sometimes it would be, ooh, that needs to be changed, or sometimes it might be, hey, that's not the right market, or maybe I'm in the wrong city. I don't know what it might be, but you're going to get feedback, and it's going to be both positive and negative sometimes.
Yeah.
And that part is where you have to get out of the ego part of it, because if I could tell, you know, like we all have those stories. I'm going to make a plaque of how many people rejected my first proposal for the book. You know, I'm going to laminate it. I kept all of them because people say no at first because they don't know who you are, you know, for 100 different reasons. Or maybe it's just we have to demonstrate tenacity. I don't know what it is, but you're going to get a first few no's and this doesn't work out. And then what happens is all of a sudden usually there's a giant reinforcement, or I find something comes in where there's enough feedback where you can say, wow, my confidence just was up, was just increased a little bit. And the funniest thing, Susan, is it's about the confidence that gets us the outcome, because we have to be or feel something first, then we go into the doing part, of course, and then we go into the having part. But I think what is funny in our brains is we think if we don't have it right away, you know, that success, or there's a billion people walking in my store, or 8 billion people have read my book, or whatever it might be, we forget that we've skipped the whole process if you try to go to the having part. And it all starts with your experience of owning it. I call owning it. And so once you get that confidence up and you do own whatever it is that you're doing, and you've kind of refined it, and you see, hey, there's a market over here, or these people like this, or it's only on Saturdays, or whatever your changes might be, what happens is it then it kind of blossoms and grows. So what I'm noticing, and I do have a second book I'm writing because I keep seeing these stages apply to so many of us who are trying to break into something new, that once
yes.
our confidence grows, then we usually get to have a, you know, a more of a concrete product. And that too has its own life cycle, as you know from business. There's the development cycle, there's the maintenance cycle, and then there's almost always the decline.
Yes.
Sorry, but that's life, you know. And so if you don't have something new to offer after X amount of time, which I think also people who are not entrepreneurial don't understand, that it's a consumer market, so you're going to always be thinking, about, okay, what's the next best thing? What do people want to hear about? What new information do I have to offer? What books do I read? And you can really yeah. kind of craft it. I'm putting together this whole model for how to really manifest almost anything you want, but you do need to honor and have huge gratitude and hugs around where you are because
yeah.
it's just part of the process. And people get frustrated, I think, and then they either give up too early or they take it on themselves as judgment of failure. And,
yes.
oh, my goodness. I mean, I think we've all been through this. I've been through it a million times, too, where if it wasn't for my daughter who came in once, I was going to trash the whole thing. Forget it. I'm not going to do this book. You know, it's like, why am I wasting my time? And she came in. She goes, this is going to be helpful. She goes, what's the matter with you? Get back on those
uh-huh.
keys and keep writing. And she goes, everybody's going to love it. Mom, it's great. You know, I'm looking at her like, oh, my God, really? You know, and she goes, oh, just turn around and go back to writing. And I'm like, okay. And I just kind of slammed it out because I needed one person to tell me it was okay. And so
yeah.
that's where it's this really complicated dance, and the growth of it is really a whole interesting, its own development. So that's my kind of a long, complicated answer to really understanding the stage gate process and how it works,
yeah.
but never, 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 never giving up and then throwing big hugs around the thing that is helping support your family, whatever it might be. I don't care what the job is. You could be doing anything as long as you're also able to be responsible and accountable to yourself and to your family, because it's hard to just shuck it all and, you know, go from being a business exec to you know, maybe selling crystals or doing something totally different. And that's where
right.
we just have to honor the process, I think, involved in both, you know, keeping them maybe both alive or maybe both alive forever. Who knows?
Yeah, I tend to, boy, I'm really resonating with this. I love your complex answers, and that's why I'm giving complex questions, I think, because first of all, you know, just going to something you said early, when you were talking about things having a life cycle, I couldn't help but think about the industry I was in, which was the computer software industry, which I'm not in anymore, but we really learn those lessons that, you know, things have an introduction, then they're really hot, and then they have a decline. And, you know, there's
right.
actually business on the decline side, too, you know, because you have to support. There are always going to be people who are holding on to that old thing, whatever it is. We see it with software all the time, but it has to do with a lot of things, including old ideas sometimes. And I think part of your role as a coach, you know, given what you do today, I sense is maybe helping people identify, too, when we're clinging to kind of that old thing, you know, whatever that may be. And I actually had a question as you were talking about inconsistency. That's another thing I think many of us have experienced, is that there tends to be a lot of experimentation in a way. And we might have something that's like, oh, my gosh, you know, this month, next, oh, that was incredible, especially if you're doing not so much a product as a service of something you're assisting someone with. I mean, or I guess it could go with a product perhaps, but it would die really fast. So I guess the question here, which I think really would help the people listening out there who are being experimental, who, you know, are you know, exploring different avenues of what works. Do I love to do this? How does this feel when I'm doing this? You know, I think you have to look at that. And then also, is there consistency? It's like, oh, you know, December was, you know, I can use my own example. November was an amazing month. You know, I had this amazing thing happen in November. Just absolutely spectacular. Okay, well, you know, can I carry that forward? Do I want to carry that forward? Do I want to do the thing that caused that amazing month to occur? And so I think that we work with this, and finding your passion and also the financial aspect both seems very consistent with your message.
Yes, and I love what you're talking about, because it's with anything, again, it goes into kind of, I'm calling it, you know, a wave. And one of the lessons, you know, one of the key rules for happy living is to manage your wave. And that wave, I like to imagine there's like, just, I'm drawing like a straight line right now, if you could see me. And then, you know, what is a happy, let's talk about like a happy, or at least a content, peaceful life, goes up and down the wave in this nice curve, you know, because we're all beings of light and we're all moving and everything's in motion and we're all moving pretty much in the pattern of a wave. And so what I like to do is to answer that question is to really look at your wave and manage your wave. Because what I used to have, and this is before I had been kind of trained as a rageaholic, because my father was, you would never know he would rage out. And so I picked up that pattern, and that would mean my wave would spike really high, and this is not in a healthy way. It would spike really high, and I'd be screaming about something, and then it would probably go really low, and then below the wave would be the experience of depression. And sometimes high above the wave could be just a joy, or a, you know, a really, really delightful experience or something that's overtly joyful. But I don't think the goal is to be super high above the wave, or definitely not to be too below the wave. It's to really stay on that wave, because the principle that kind of, I think, gets to kind of that inconsistency question is about how do you... It's from with as within, so without. So if I'm feeling, you know, it's, you know, if I'm feeling invested and I'm doing my part and I am accountable and I am consistent with what I'm doing towards my goal, what I've, you know, what I have found is that the outside seems to match whatever I've got going on the inside. So one of the tricks, and this is kind of a challenge, as I'm sure you know, having been in the business world and being an entrepreneur yourself, is that there is the entrepreneurial cycle, which is when you get a lot of things in, like your November, you work, and you get all excited and you get that thing going. But what happens is you're not selling. So then there happens, usually there's an experience of like a feast and a famine. You get, oh my gosh, get all this great stuff, and then it goes to nothing, and we think, oh my God, what happened? What did I do? Nobody likes me. Oh my God, they were mad at me. You know, and so, and that's the trick, even for myself, you know, best year ever last year. These first couple months have been quiet, and I'm thinking, what did I do? Where did they go? Where are the people? You know, and so I have to coach myself even and say, all right. And there's part of the training that we're going to do, I mean, and here's just a little tip. There's this book called The Abundance Book, and it is awesome. I don't know if you've ever read it. It's by Price. His last name is Price, is the author. And they have these simple statements, and these simple statements, all they really do, you say one a day for 10 days, and you're supposed to go on for 30 days and not miss a day. And if you miss a day, your punishment, you have to go back to the beginning. So you say it like before you go to bed. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because it's a simple, simple, simple reminder that we're the power source. We're the battery. Yeah. We're everything's coming from. And if you can keep that open and attracting, like, you know, your little light beam is going on and you're beaconing for others who are a good match to show up, it seems like when I remember to go into this kind of reinforcement of, I've got this, it's all good, my confidence is high, if I don't have work today, I'll have it tomorrow, if, you know, whatever it is you're looking to attract to yourself, that is what needs to be managed, and to get consistent on that from the inside. And so... And not to let the those, you know, terrifying messages, which run our dark side, to take over. Because that's right. The part that as humans, you know, we have those fears, those lovely little fears about, I'm never going to eat again, or I won't be able to.
I refer to it as the cliff.
Yes. Yeah. And I call it the land of lack, you know. there's never good, you know, it's always in three camps, you know.
Yeah.
It's about me, it's about the other guy, or it's about the world's going to, like, take all my food and my house. And so,
and so
if we cannot go to the land there, or to the cliff.
Exactly.
That, I feel, is one of the biggest, it's kind of probably one of our biggest life lessons for all of us, to learn how to manage that and to go with that flow, because as we know, like all seasons, you know, there is the life cycle. That's what fall is all about. Winter is, you know, we're about ending winter, at least in Chicago. And, you know, oh, wow, it's rebirth. Well, we're going to have the exact same experiences. And it's just really learning how to keep yourself entertained, happy. And I keep calling it the I Love It inventory because one of the exercises we do is try to get really in touch with the passion area in these exercises. And then once you have your passion area, see how many times you can say during a week, wow, I love the fact that I got to go out for a walk. I loved this. I loved making a meal for these guys. Whatever it might be that got your resonant factor up, that's how I find that everybody's life feels better from the inside. You have to start resonating at a different level. And it's the tail spinning that we got to really, really, really watch out for, because that's the, like you said, that's the dark side that's going to run you right to the edge.
Yeah, and you need to acknowledge it. And, you know, when I think of the cliff, I think of it almost in a loving way, although I've even joked about it, you know, dancing on the edge of the cliff. Although you don't want to dance too close to the edge. I mean, I think the ideal is not dancing right at the edge of the cliff. But I appreciate how we can get into that lack-based, that fear-based thinking. I mean, this show is about fear. And it's a pretty mature show over the years. It's matured, the relationship with fear, how it is a relationship we have with fear, and how we utilize it and recognize it when we see it and things like that. I have one more work question, then I really want to switch to relationships, because I'm realizing, gosh, I knew it. You're the kind of guest, Diane, I could probably do several shows with, because I'm enjoying this conversation. Well, it's just so much fun and helpful. I know that this is helping people very much so. It's certainly helping me, too. One more question about the work cycle, really quick, because we got to get to relationships, because you've got such powerful things to talk about there, is another thing I have observed is how do we manage our energy levels in the sense of, okay, I'll use myself as an example. I did something really cool business-wise in November. However, it had a bit of a downside, because when we do something really cool, sometimes we're so invested in that thing that's really cool. It's taken a lot of our energy. I mean, it's fun energy. It's great. We're on, you know, we're really enjoying doing what we're doing. However, there's a period where we need rest. Now, I was kind of fortunate that the holidays came up, but you know what? If they hadn't, I might not have given myself that opportunity to rest a little bit, because we have a tendency to keep going, 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 going. This happened in the corporate world. Oh, boy, if I ever experienced it there. And, you know, this is where you get burnout. And as an entrepreneur, how do we even that out so that, you know, we keep ourselves nourished and don't exhaust ourselves even when we're having success?
Well, again, I can relate on every single aspect of that, and that's where I think so many of us are in the same boat, where we want to take on something new, let's say, but we already have a full-time job, and that takes so much more energy and effort than you really ever imagined, and I always say to everyone, you know, the key. Isn't it funny how the key to life is about balance? And it's about looking at those, the quintessence, the four quadrants of, you know, your physical, your emotional, your spiritual, and your mental, and keeping those in alignment, and I'm going to say at all times. Now, we're humans, and we're always doing the best we can, so most of us probably are not going to have that mastered, but it's an ever-ending kind of journey where I ask myself key questions, and this is just a good one that I've just found to be so helpful for a lot of the individuals that I coach, and say, what would self-love look like right now? And for a person who's in burnout, who's been running a million miles an hour, hasn't really slept, doesn't eat even right, and I hate to say it, but I'm getting off of it, but I used to be an adrenaline junkie, where it was always about, you know, okay, I did this, then I did that, then I did this, then I, and all that, like just that pressure and that stress, because the mountain seems so big to climb that I had to run up a mountain like and haul everybody up there with me. And I realized that it was the antithesis of demonstrating self-love.
Yeah.
And that's one of the key tricks. As much as this corporate world, I think, really promotes being an adrenaline junkie, because, you know, your boss said at 6 o'clock, oh, this is due tomorrow morning, we kind of forget that everything's a choice.
Yeah.
And the truth is, you can say, that doesn't work for me, or no, I just can't get to that, or I have to deal with family issues, or whatever it might be. There are ways in which you can demonstrate self-love. And I think that's one of the key things. I don't think I learned that. I'm still working on it, just because I get so caught up in how much I want to create, as a lot of us are, just being creative people. We want to create this, and I don't, my website isn't good enough, or whatever it might be, or we're polishing
right.
and polishing and polishing all that new stuff. Or as my fiancé says, we polish the turd. That's what he calls it. Where where he's like, you already have something up there. Now you're polishing and polishing it. I go, yeah, but it's not. He goes, come on, it's good enough. Good is good enough. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm demonstrating my perfectionistic weaknesses right now, and that I'd like this to be better, and I wish that was up there. And so I've had to really take a look at good enough,
yeah.
how important rest is, and how important it is to do something for me. And those are things where I'd really like everybody to take a look at some of those key aspects of it. Sometimes it's the walk, sometimes it's watching a show, sometimes it's going to bed early, sometimes it's taking yourself out for dinner, which I actually really love to do because nobody
yeah.
talks to me. It's quiet.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it might be that makes you feel good. And you really got to get back there, because otherwise we're out of balance. And then we're moving actually more towards disease rather than health.
Yes. You know, as I reflect upon this, I'm realizing, you know, I'm thinking back to last year and I'm realizing, you know, at the same time that I had this business thing going on that needed to be done, I actually had also a life crisis in a way going on, where there was a health situation in the family I was dealing with. There were, you know, other life things all together. And now I'm realizing, you know what, that was a pretty complex situation, and that I somehow managed to do the business thing, which was amazing. Maybe it was somewhat distracting me from the other things going on, although I was putting myself into that too, where it needed attention, because there was a health situation I was dealing with in the family. And it all was together. And now, so my next question, as we launch into relationships and, you know, personal, more personal situations, is, you know, how do we integrate that and into a more balanced way of looking at it? And I realized looking at this that my cat just wanted to come in very emphatically right now. It's very odd. It's like she, you know, it's as if raising the alarm. Yeah. Probably nobody hears that, but, you know, I do this show from home. I am just trying to think back on this as to how, boy, you know, there's a complicated interplay in our lives. I mean, I guess that's what I'm seeing, is that, you know, sometimes we resort to business things when other things aren't going so well, and maybe we have great success, you know, and that may have been part of that. Other times, you know, it's just, how do we, I'd like to hear more of your lessons from relationships and from parenting as well, because I know you've had some pretty intense situations in your journey, including navigating through a divorce, and you talk about an addictive relationship, and through all of this, you know, you're a parent too. So there's we all navigate these very intricate lives, and do we view them that way, as intricate? How do we view them?
Well, the easiest way for me to answer that is to really, I'm going to go back to one of the rules, only because it applies so strongly to relationships. The key for me that I found was learning how to speak my piece in the moment in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that I was, you know, background was cover up. And we had I always say we have a rug in the middle of the family room in my family's house that's like 20 feet tall, and everybody's secrets and everybody's things they didn't want anyone to know about, and everything we every time we went shopping, my mom would never say anything about it, and I don't know what the cost was. You know, whatever it was, we were never really fully disclosed about anything,
yeah.
and that was my family of
yeah.
origin. So I had to take almost 2 years to learn how to say yes means yes, no means no, but in every situation, I now got to the point where I can navigate and answer from inside, you know, going kind of like to that heart space, and answer with whatever it is in earnest, and
yeah.
say things like, it's especially with schools, I still am at grade school and high school, you know, like, will you do this? Will you be part of that? Will you be part of the PTA? Will you coach this?
Absolutely.
And I always have
yeah.
to say, you know how it is, the helicopter parent thing, and
it becomes
a pervasive part.
I was a PTO president, let me tell you.
Oh, wow, okay. So you're in this up to your eyeballs.
Not recently.
And the whole thing, I had to go back to, and I learned a bunch of lessons, not fun lessons, hard lessons, about how I had to say, that doesn't work for me, whatever it was. And if it did work for me and I wanted to do it, I had to want to do it from the heart, looking for nothing else but my enjoyment with the situation. And, I cannot tell you the nightmare stories. There are so many stories about having coached. I coached volleyball. I coached cheerleading. I was involved in running the fundraisers. I'm the creative person, so I had to direct 4 plays.
Yes.
And what I found, and this is just was my lesson from it, working with the kids was extraordinary. Loved them, loved the educational process, loved watching the growth. The parents, it was a nightmare because there was so many things that were off, and so many people were saying coercive things, and so many people were blackmailing, and they like to do emotional blaming and shaming, and all this weird stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was a volunteer coach for cheerleading.
Yeah.
And they were, and so it was becoming this thing where I had to really step back and say, okay, do I want to do it? Do I want to stay?
Yeah.
And also, what is my enjoyment in this? What is it that I love about doing it? And I really had to get back to those fundamentals of keeping my circle just around me. So not only in relationships, speaking my truth in the moment in a healthy way. Healthy way, not going after anybody or saying anything that's unkind, but really saying, when this was said, this is how I took it, and I want to talk to you about that so we can. Can I give you a quick story?
Oh,
this one
do
where
you
I was a cheerleading coach, and they were saying I was too strict, and I was demanding that people show up for the game so that when they were doing lifts, that the right person was there, so the whole thing didn't fall over. And anyway, this one person wrote me a whole letter, like not only an email, but it was like, I don't know, it had to be 500 to 1,000 words, letter about how they wanted to make sure that I backed off and I wasn't, you know, requiring that people be there. And if they weren't there, there were other things for them to do, but I just didn't want them doing the lifts because I was afraid somebody would get hurt. And they wrote me this full letter. And so what I did is I got the letter. I didn't even read it. I picked up the phone and I called them. I said, did you write me a letter instead of just calling to talk to me? And she's like, oh, yeah, I wrote you a letter. I said, you know what? You don't have to write me a letter. Let's talk about it. What can we do to work it out? Because, of course, the letter said all these things in it that I didn't even want to read because they're just jabs and stabs. And I thought, how silly is it that we can't just have a little dialogue that will take 5 minutes and everyone's happy and that we have to turn everything gets into this circus. So I've become very, very, very quick on picking up the phone. I've become very quick on making sure everything's a dialogue and making sure there's kind of a healthy resolution saying, I hear you, you know, this part I understand, and can we come up this, let's have an agreement, you know, verbal agreements. So I use a lot of things from really about, which we're not taught in school, we should be, taught how to navigate through a relationship using dialogue, using heart, using understanding, using negotiating and having verbal agreements and also sometimes written agreements so that everybody understands. And it's funny how much everything turns into a zero energy situation. Everybody feels comfortable, happy, and then it's resolved. And that's one thing that's missing, not only in our educational system, but it's missing, I think, in our society, where it's much easier now to write your little one, write a text that could be a nastygram, than to actually speak from the heart. So that's part of it. And then the other part is really look at your circle. And I like to use the manage your circle. If we're sitting, standing right here, there's like a 3-foot circle that's around us. That's all we have to manage. There is no reason for you to be in anybody else's circle because it's not your circle. And so when I really remind myself, clients, my family, that's not yours to deal with. So when you're complaining about somebody else or this person didn't do that, really the question is, what needs of mine weren't met? And what can I do to meet those needs? And again, rest, this gets back into kind of like tying in with the previous question, but if you're really looking at that little cylinder, I always laugh because Abraham Hicks says, act like a cat. And, you know, my cat wants three things. A good meal, fish in it, something really stinky, as you have talked, you have your cat right there.
And
you
mine wants to be in the room with me.
A nice pet, they want a nice rub, you know, and some company. And then he wants to go out when he wants to go out. And other than taking care of his litter box, that cat wants nothing else, and he is perfectly content because he will make sure that I give him those things. You know what I mean?
Oh,
how they are, you know?
So I just experienced
if we all, and if we took care of our needs maybe a little bit more, reflecting that kind of view, hey, you know, I need to rest now. I need to talk to you now. I would like to clear this up with you so that the energy. So the nice thing is our household is like glass because everything's dealt with in the moment. If anything does get shoved under the rug, it gets bright, bright. You know, can I talk to you about that? When you said that, it kind of hurt me a little bit. I'd like to see what you were thinking. And so it really never gets blown out of proportion. I think when there's no lid on the pot because the pot's not boiling, it's kind of fun, actually. It's a lot more fun. Same thing with the divorce. It's not easy to navigate a divorce ever. And I would never underestimate the energy it takes to get through that. But I think it's because of the communication, because we had the same goals as to be, you know, great parents and take care of these children, that we were able to use all these communication skills to really get through it, but also at some point say, what is appropriate and what is not appropriate, because that gets into the whole addiction aspect of it. I do believe we all have some sometimes hidden, but we all have these character traits that are maybe not our greatest strength. And one of mine that came out in an addiction was being a rescuer, world class. And I didn't even know I had it, Susan. I didn't even think this was who I was as a human being, but I was so open to feeling love at that time that I would have done anything for it. And I got into an addictive relationship, and I didn't realize that, you know, most of what I was hearing was lies. It took me, a lot of things didn't set right, but I ignored them. Some of the words, like, what do you mean? You know, I didn't know what was going on. So the best story in the whole book is about Jeff, who is the relationship I had where he was a very sick alcoholic. And most loving man I've ever met in my whole life, incredibly attractive. But he also had the darkness of the soul that was really something that could not be healed. And so it had this big tragic ending, and he, you know, I had to almost get physically injured to stop. It took almost my personal safety being completely at risk for me to say, okay, who are you? What are you doing? This is not you. It's almost like the battered wife thing where they have to be hurt to the point where they go to the hospital in order to say, no, that's not right. I have to be worth something. This is enough. You know, rock bottom, I'm just not going to keep going with this. And so that relationship, the greatest education ever, but one of the hardest lessons is to have to say, my life is more important than saving you. And I have to take care of me because I have other people that rely on me to survive. And it took that kind of dramatic situation. So it's a lot of very soap opera, very things that I saw no person should ever have to see. But at the end of the day, thank God I have it because I see it coming. I now, if there are addictions, and I think we all have some, I can name it, I can claim it, I can call it out, and I can help other people with it as well, just because I've been able to experience that. And so, in a way, it's a gift, but that was a toughie. That was
That's
probably
a painful
the toughest
gift.
Lesson. Of,
yes.
Oh.
Yes. Yes, I feel like we've only brushed the surface of the whole relationship area. I mean, I know that you would have a lot more to share on this, because that's such a powerful, powerful topic, and so pivotal in everyone's life is, you know, how to navigate that. And you said something, you know, that word worth, you know, recognizing your own worth. That's so powerful and so linked to being empowered. And, you know, it's from the sounds of it, I mean, you've discovered love for yourself. And I guess, you know, we're in the last 5 minutes. Wow, this went by fast. You know, I thought we had maybe a couple more, but gosh, I have so appreciated this conversation. And quite honestly, I would love to invite you back to more deeply explore some of these aspects, the depression, your health situation, how you navigated that, as well as the relationship side. I'd love to have you back sometime, but I want to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about where people can learn more about you. And I also just want to give you a big thank you from my heart what a wonderful conversation. Thank you, Diane.
Oh, this has been so much fun. Thank you. I mean, you're a dream. I just love talking to you. And yes, I would love to come back. But the book is called The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now. It's on Amazon.com. It's on BarnesandNoble.com. It's in select bookstores. And it's also, you can find it very easily through my website, which is called LiveYourEverything.com. And the website is still new and evolving, but it is becoming, as I hope, my vision for it is to become a sanctuary for life transformation, mm-hmm. where people can go to get product information. I like to provide reviews that are completely my recommendations on the best products for health, wellness, anti-aging, for finding balance, for personal development and growth, and just anything I can find that really, really works. And so it's still new and it's still evolving, but that is where that website, I hope, is going to go. So any latest and greatest products I love to hear about, too. So if you know mm-hmm. of anything or want to communicate with me, I'm also Facebook, Twitter, and all those different places. So I'd love to hear from you as well.
Well, you have a wonderful social media presence that I saw. And let me say thank you for that affirmation. That's really sweet. And thank you for everything that you're doing in the world, Diane. I'm really appreciative to be making this discovery of all that you're doing. And I'm happy to share this with my audience because, you know, that's what it comes down to, is you are helping people change their lives. And in doing so, you know, we make this world a better place, one person at a time. And so I just want to again express just how appreciative I am for everything you're doing and who you are and how you're shining your light. So thank you, Diane.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been awesome.
All right. Well, thanks so much. I agree. I really enjoyed it. So thank you again for being here. And I do look forward to another conversation. I'd love to explore more with you. So take care, Diane. Thanks for being here today.
Okay. Thank you. And thanks again. And everybody, thanks for listening. I'm really, really, it's been an honor.
Oh, well, thank you. It's an honor to have you here. And so take care, Diane. Just a quick show note to those of you listening before the live show goes down. Yes, let me once again emphasize that thank you from Diane. I am so appreciative to the community surrounding this show, and I hope this has been a helpful conversation for many of you, because usually, vicariously, I can tell that, you know, these guests coming on one after another, so amazing. The next show is Tuesday, March 31st. At 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, Steve O'Neill Nobel is coming on to talk about personal transitions, a wonderful leader. We have two big leaders coming on the show. I feel so honored about next week. Friday, April 3rd, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, Nick Jenkel's coming on to talk about his book, Switch On. These people are making amazing differences in the world, just like today's guests who I mean, it's just radiating the light through her own authenticity and sharing that and conveying it in such a powerful way. So I hope you do visit Diane Bischoff James's website, liveyoureverything.com, and check out her book, because I think that she has a very powerful message. So check it out, The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now. And to learn about all the upcoming shows and the past guests as well, frontierbeyondfear.com is the place to go. And so I welcome you to come to that site and check out what's going on. Like Diane's site, it continues to evolve. I think we're all working on evolving our sites. And so thank you, everyone, for being here today. And I hope that this has been a powerful hour for you and that you will take it and really take the steps that you need to take to true transformation. Take care, everyone.